Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Blake Stinnett, 12 years of combination experience, second-generation firefighter, part-time firefighter with Greene County Fire Department in Georgia, and creator of Next Rung, whose mission is to help combat mental health issues among firefighters and first responders. I had the privilege to sit in on a presentation at this past Carolina Fire Days where Blake discussed having love and passion for the job, family, and faith. Blake has a strong Christian belief and isn't afraid to let others know. He also has something special about him when he speaks on whatever the subject may be. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and truly believe others will too. With that, I present Blake Stinnett.
Hey, my name is Blake Stinnett, and man, my fire service career is kind of fun. I grew up around the fire service. My mom and dad were actually both in the fire service. The county that I grew up in was strictly volunteer at the time. And was like that until probably almost through my entire middle school career, I guess. And anyway, at some point, my mom's like, I don't know if it's smart for both of us to be going into fire. So my mom stepped out and my dad continued to volunteer. So I grew up around the fire service, loved it, you know, grew up going to the firehouse and, you know, playing on the rigs and, you know, just running calls with my dad and things like that, and just really had a love for it. And then for myself personally, where it started is I was also a volunteer in the same county, in Newton County, for about 2.5 years. And at the time, I was trying to get hired on full time and, you know, had a couple interviews and didn't get hired on. And then the economy kind of tanked and, you know, a lot of people were hitting hiring freezes and things like that. So I just kind of put it off. You know, I quit volunteering and just continued to work in ministry, which I was doing full time. And in 2015, I decided to give it a shot again and got hired on with Gwinnett County Fire. And that's where I started my full-time career. And just a blast, man. Gwinnett was a great place to work. I was there for about 3 years. And then I went to Sandy Springs Fire and was there for 7.5 years. There I rode our heavy rescue. Our squad was, you know, tech rescue, man. That was the absolute best assignment that I ever had. And you know, really neat. I got to actually put that rig in service when we actually put a squad in service. So I was on that the entire time that, you know, that I was there from its induction until I left at the end of 2023. And right now, currently, I'm just part-time. So I say just part-time. I work part-time for Greene County. And it's, you know, it's a little bit different, you know, not going in every third day, but still get to show up and go to the firehouse. And currently right now I'm actually in full-time ministry again. I took a full-time position at our church at the end of 2023. So for the past little over a year, man, that's kind of where I've been, but still going and working part-time in Greene County, which is where I serve now. So that's it in a nutshell. We can go in and dive into that a lot more, but that's, you know, really kind of, you know, the streamlined version of it.
Okay. All right. So I guess it's safe to say you're second generation firefighter, because your dad was a firefighter as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And so, you know, you mentioned with it being in essentially in your bloodline, when you were growing up, you know, you got to see both your parents, you know, doing volunteer things, you know, springing into action when needed. I guess that's when you were like, hey, this is what I want to do as well.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I don't know if it's instilled in you or if you just have such a love for it. And man, I truly wanted to do it right out of high school and just felt like the Lord was pulling me, you know, to go to school and get a degree in ministry and have an undergrad in psychology and a master's in theological studies and, you know, been in ministry for, I mean, really, since I was out of high school. I took a break for about 2 years when I went into, you know, career side of the fire service. But really, I've been working part-time, man, you know, even since then, doing the student ministry at our church and things like that. So it's just always been such a huge love of mine, just seeing the importance of that and just seeing the way that my parents served and, you know, I guess, yeah, I mean, it's just in your blood, man. Like, it's just something, I don't know if it's a bug that you catch or whatever it is, you know, that you just can't get out of your mind. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I knew I knew that I wanted to make an impact in the lives of firefighters. And the only way that I was going to actually be able to do that is if I was one myself. And so that's really what catapulted me in 2015 to go into the career side, because I wanted to make a difference in firemen. I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know what that was going to be, but I knew for a fact that was what my mission was, is how can I impact not just the community, but the people that I work beside. I didn't know, what next rung was going to be. I didn't know any of that stuff. So, it's just really interesting, where my heart was on that. And so that's really what pushed me going into the fire service full time, is I just saw and felt such a need to go in and make a difference there.
Okay. So upon entering the career side in 2015, walking through the doors of Gwinnett County, was becoming a career fireman everything you thought it would be?
Yes, and more. It's a lot, it was for us, we were there for 13 months. So that was Monday through Friday. I would leave the house at 4:30 and get back home around 6:30 p.m. So it was long days for 13 months. We at that point, they had swapped everything for us. We had to become a paramedic, so we had to go through paramedic school, pass everything, and then you got to go to fire school. So you had to go through all the hustle and bustle just to get to where you wanted to be. And but yes, it was everything I thought it would be and more. Just such a great experience. It's discipline. It's just so many different things. I hadn't experienced as far as, the workforce. I'd never been on that side of things. And I tell you what, man, it did so much for me just, to see what true work looks like, what discipline looks like, what, being a part of a team on that side of things and the fire service looks like. Man, it was a lot of fun. There was long days, and sometimes you're like, does this end? Do I get to go out on the line and actually do this thing? But it did, man. It was a ton of fun though.
Okay. With that being said, your first assignment, once you received it, did you go out and seek those individuals you wanted to be like in the fire service?
I don't know that I did immediately. My first assignment was Station 9, and man, a lot of it was on a med unit. So, it was just trying to grind through that. But I would say my first assignment after that, after getting the clearance to perform and do all those things, was at Station 6 in Gwinnett County. Man, that lieutenant actually is on our peer support team now, is, a really good friend of mine. So I happened to fall into just a really good place. I had an incredible driver and just a great crew, where they taught me what that looked like. I think even at Station 9, there was a couple of guys there where we would work out together. We would do stuff and just build, that camaraderie. It was a lot of fun. But I think my second assignment at Station 6 was probably where I fell into that more and just saw the importance of what that looks like. Seeing the difference between good lieutenants and bad lieutenants, officers as a whole, and just people on your crew and how they contribute, that you learn so much. So I think that's probably where I started to pay attention to it more.
Okay. All right. And so you said you stayed there for 3 years and then you switched over to Sandy Springs.
Correct.
This is going on today. So was it a difficult decision switching departments?
Very much so. And I think it came back down to my crew, like we were just talking about. I loved showing up to work every third day. I love those guys, and that's really what weighed my decision so heavily in my heart. Like, man, like if I leave, man, this is what I'm leaving behind. And like, that's sad. Like I, as you think about it, like, man, I just, if I could take them with me, I could. But it really, what I started to also weigh in my mind is, man, there's a chance that I could get moved, our crew could get busted up, I could get put on the other side of the county or whatever it is. So that's kind of where I had to weigh that decision and make that final decision of, this isn't forever. If we all know that change is inevitable. You're going to lose people off of your crew, or you're going to get moved around. So really what I went to Sandy Springs for was just different opportunities. It was a little bit smaller. I say a little bit, a lot smaller. I went from having over 30 stations and 5 battalions to go into 1 battalion and 5 stations. So, big difference there. But really, what I wanted was to be able to push myself forward in some certain aspects that I didn't know that if I would get that opportunity at Gwinnett immediately. So that's really what helped me make that decision.
Okay. And if I could ask you for some that are listening that, you know, maybe that's in their mind of like leaving or don't, what's the best advice you can tell someone who's possibly considering that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that you have to do is do your research, do your homework. You know, the grass isn't always greener. Sometimes it is, you know, like sometimes the grass is actually greener, you know, but a lot of times people say, well, the grass isn't always greener. Do your research, talk to people there. Why are you leaving? Is it just out of, you know, some small frustrations, or is it for opportunities? Is it, you know, to be able to excel in your career in different ways? And so I think that's kind of really where you have to weigh it at the end of the day, you know, what's best for you, what's best for your family, what's going to be better for you in this career that you love so much. I want people to show up and be happy, you know, if it's a difference in going somewhere else, and so that you can stay in the career and be happy and do the things that you want to do. Do that. There's still going to be frustrations there, though, you know. So that's just a fair warning. Like anywhere that you go, any department that you go to, there are issues that just are going to be there, you know, that it's leadership, it's, you know, whatever it is, it's resources. I don't know. There's so many different things that go into that. But I would just say, you know, look at it for yourself, do your research. Make sure that it's going to be a good move. And yeah, I mean, just jump. Sometimes you just got to jump, you know, and hope for the best, you know. There's always, you know, I guess the words on the wall or whatever of, man, this is going to be so good. But there's also a chance, like, man,
Right.
I've heard people that jump and they're like, that was not the right choice for me, and they end up going back to where they came from. So I think you just got to take a risk sometimes, but you know, kind of a methodical risk, and you know, a decision that you've kind of honed in on and say, all right, this is where I got to go.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask you one of the first questions. What is, in your opinion, what is your definition of professionalism?
Professionalism, in my opinion, is showing up to your firehouse and being able to perform the duties that are put before you, and also being able to have the mindset to serve the people that you work beside.
Okay. All right. And with that, along with that question of professionalism, this is a buzzword. It's going around. It's been around the fire service for a little bit, especially on social media. Aggressive. What does that mean to you?
It's, you know, giving everything you got. I mean, it's trying to, not trying, it's knowing and understanding what the purpose is when you show up on a fire scene, really any scene, but specifically fires. You know, what are you supposed to do, and what is your understanding of that? Because everyone has a different understanding, you know, sadly, like it's not the same everywhere. So knowing and understanding that your job there is to risk everything, you know, if there's someone inside, we're going and we're risking everything. And I think when it comes to aggressive, that's where it should be, is it's not clear till we say it's clear. Like we have to go in and understand what that means for us. And sometimes our hands are tied behind our back by leadership or officers or you know, SOPs or whatever it is, man. Like there's it's trying to change that culture to say, hey, this is what aggressive looks like, you know. And for me, I think it's, you know, search before a hose line if that's what's necessary, you know. Like we got to go in, we got to do what we're supposed to do. And you know, to me, that's aggressive, along with continuing to work on all those things, being aggressive in your training, and just making sure that you are continuing to further yourself in that. You can never be too good at it. You can never have too much training. You can never do too many things to make sure that you're giving everything you got for the people that you're going to serve.
Love it. Love the answer. All right. next big question. Next rung. How did it happen, and what caused you to think like, I'm gonna go ahead and do this?
Yeah, man, that was in 2017. So I'd been on with Gwinnett for a little over almost 2 years, and Really, I started Next Rung as a t-shirt company. We had stickers, right? So I had stickers made and I would send them out to people like, hey, would you mind putting this on your helmet or your water bottle? Take a picture. And man, at the time, there wasn't a clear direction on what we were doing with that. The goal was, hey, let's just, make some apparel and things of that nature, hats, t-shirts, stickers, the run of the gamut kind of thing. And we're just going to take a portion of the proceeds and give that back to a nonprofit who's doing good things. And in March of 2017, I started that in January, and then in March of 2017, one of the guys that I work with, Sam Garrison, took his own life in Gwinnett County. And it just, I remember being on shift that day and a text message came through. My partner, that was beside me, got a phone call, and it just changed everything, man. It made me ask a lot of questions after that. Is this normal? It was my first death in the fire service and first funeral that I was going to, and it was a suicide. And man, it just broke my heart. Sam was just such a happy person. He was always, cracking jokes. He spent a lot of time with us when I was going through rookie school. Like, he would come as an adjunct instructor and he would spend a lot of time with us there. So I got to know him well during that time of my career, and just such a great guy, and it really, man, it made me sad. And from there, I just started doing some research and asking questions. And then I brought Charlie on, which is our co-founder, and we're like, hey, where do we go from here? Like, we're talking about mental health, we're encouraging people, we're also posting workouts, the physical aspect of the job. But he's like, where do we actually want to go from here? And both of us just having our own experiences, we decided that, man, we want to tell people how to get help, but we also, when we tell them that they should get help, like, we want to provide a resource for them. And so that's kind of where we decided to put our money where our mouth is and become a nonprofit. So we filed for our nonprofit status in 2017 and got it, I believe December 27th was the post date that we became a nonprofit. So we really started as a nonprofit in 2018, and from there, man, we just kind of jumped off into it. It's like, hey, how do we help people? Well, let's, get a Google number and people can text us and say, hey, I need to talk to someone. And so that was really the whole mentality for me. What I saw at Gwinnett is, as a rookie firefighter who hadn't been on very long, I didn't know what those resources were. I didn't know that we had an EAP. I didn't know that we had a peer support team. I didn't know any of that stuff existed until I had already left Gwinnett. I was like, well, that'd have been nice to know, that we had something like that. And we ended up losing five guys in a little over 2.5 years at Gwinnett to suicide. One was a retiree, and then some others that were active duty. And so there was a lot of guys lost in a department in a short span of time. And it just, man, it just broke my heart, continue to break my heart and just say, hey, we got to do something. And so Next Rung had already started. We already become a nonprofit as this stuff was going on. And just the support that we got, even after I left Gwinnett, like, guys are still reaching out to me and they're like, hey, man, we need Next Rung. Like, we need, someone to talk to. We need someone to come help us out with this stuff, so just seeing the need for that. But really, that's how it started, as a t-shirt company that turned into a nonprofit and just said, hey, you know what? We've got to do something to serve the people that we're working beside, because we're losing them at a rate, that is higher than what line of duty deaths are, and that's not okay. And so we just moved from there and just continue to develop, what we do. So we started with a helpline, and now it's available, 7 days a week. We have over 30, firefighters and first responders that serve on that team and, do a daily rotation. And we are able to also provide financial assistance and line people up with professional resources, counseling, treatment, whatever that looks like. We're here to help with that and to make sure that they're actually getting a good resource, something that's, someone that's been vetted, and we can make sure that they've worked with first responders in the past, or they're trauma, informed, things of that nature. So really, man, it's just been trial by fire. We've learned it all over the past 7 years of, what does this look like? How do we operate? And it's been such a fun ride. We've helped over 2,500 first responders at this point. And I say first responders, man, a majority of what we deal with is firefighters and EMS, and then we get the occasional, 911 operator as well. So, but man, it's been a ton of fun just to, pour our efforts into that and see the fruits of it, and it's kind of one of those things, like, it's unfortunate that we need it, but if we're gonna need it, then we want to be there to help.
Okay. You mentioned Charlie, the other co-founder. How did that relationship form?
Typical millennial, Instagram bro. Like, so when I'd first started Nextrung, I don't know how his feed came across our page, but anyway, like I'm a CrossFit guy, man. So I saw him, he was in a CrossFit gym. I was like, hey man, like if I send you a shirt, you're West Coast, like that's really cool. I haven't really talked to anybody that's a West Coast fireman. He's in California. And I was like, man, I would love to send you a shirt if you just don't mind posting it or whatever, we'll repost it and just kind of get the brand out there was the idea. And anyway, I was like, hey, is that your gym? Like, 'cause he was in there by himself. It was just a picture or whatever. He's like, no, it's not my gym, but I'm one of the instructors here or one of the coaches here. And anyway, so we just kind of had a conversation, man. And then we kept having conversations over time. Like we just found common interest. And he's like, hey man, I noticed that it's faith-based or whatever. That's really cool. So we start talking about that kind of stuff. It just was really neat, man, how that kind of formed just over Instagram. And as we started talking more and we were having more conversations, I finally just asked him. I was like, hey man, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I feel like the Lord's put it on my heart to ask you. Like, I can't do this by myself. I need someone to help me with this. I said, I'm on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast. I said, I think it'd be really cool to start there, and then we can just kind of close the gap as we begin to bring people on. He's like, yeah, man, I'll talk to my wife about it. I'll pray about it. And he came back and he's like, hey, man, I'm in. So, man, it's just crazy how it works out. And, we've become, he's my best friend, man. Like, it's the craziest thing how, social media can be so cool. And then it can also be so bad at the same time. But,
Right.
that one worked out so well, man. I'm very thankful for it and just the way that the Lord worked that out.
Okay. With your obviously, faith plays a huge role in your life. My question for you is, don't want to say how are you, but in the fire service, there's certain things we tend to not talk too much about. There's things that a lot of firefighters like to hide, but how are you so open with your faith?
Man, it's funny because when I got into the fire service and went through rookie school at Gwinnett, people were like, hey, what'd you do? Or what'd you do before? Of like, I was in ministry. Like, oh, like, so it was always, man, like they're always ragging on me, even like through rookie school and stuff like that, not in a bad way, but
Right.
like, oh, the pastor over here, like, watch out what you say, that kind of stuff. So I feel like that's kind of followed me everywhere that I've gone because even when I left Gwinnett and went to Sandy Springs, I brought a couple of guys with us. Like, I'm like, hey man, I'm over here. It's great. The grass is greener over here. And so they ended up coming over. And it's funny, man, because even then, like one of the guys, man, who's a good friend of mine, Robert Coney's, he'd be like, hey, you guys know about Blake's past, and stuff like that. So, like he would bring stuff up and it's just funny. But it's just, it's one of those things, man, like you talk about what you do. I was working part-time in ministry, so it wasn't anything that I ever hid. Sometimes it just starts with being the person that says a prayer at the table, and before a meal, and the conversations just go from there. And no one ever looked at me and be like, man, he's holier than thou. Things like that. Like it was just always really cool. A lot of Christians are out there, even if they don't talk about it openly. It's just one of those things that, man, you just got to continue to be who you are and understand what your purpose is and not hide those things. You can't push them on people. Like I don't preach at people. I don't beat them with a Bible, but if it's one of those things like, hey man, I'm going through this. I'm like, hey man, I'm praying for you or whatever, like it's just the subtle things that you can say or that you can do. But it's just, I think you can also kind of feel people out and see where they're at and how they talk. And sometimes you just got to ask, like, hey man, are you a faith person? Like, are you a Christian or whatever it might be? And just kind of move from there, man. But I've never hidden it, man. And the Lord's blessed that and just continues to remind me, like, he's the reason that all this happened. You know what I mean? Like, none of this would be here without him anyway. So I just want to continue to honor that and all that I do. And I'm not perfect, man. Like, you know what I
Right.
mean? Like, and I don't claim to be. And I've made just as many mistakes or more than other people. So I just just try to live and have grace and understand it that way.
Okay. All right. One personal question for me. So like if me and you worked for the same department and I knew you and I knew your background, like for me, I'm just gonna be transparent. I curse like a sailor. Okay. Like but I can turn it off and then I can turn it on. And like when I'm around the guys at the firehouse, I let it fly. So like would that make you uncomfortable?
No, not at all, man.
Okay.
I tell people all the time, like, I love a good cuss word, man. Like, it's I mean, I've been around it for, so long, and the only thing I'll ever say, dude, is like when people say GD, I'm like, oh, is G
Right,
the Lord
right,
is here? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
or be like, what does he have to do with it? Like, I'll just I don't know, man, just make little jabs at him. But I can say this, man, like, I'm not perfect. I've let cuss words fly. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not against it whatsoever, and some people are like, well, how are you not? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I just feel comfortable around it. You know what I mean? It's so funny.
Okay, all right. I just had, but I agree with you that the GD, I tend to not do that. And if I catch myself, I immediately say like, I'm sorry. Like I'll either say it out loud or in my head. And it's like, all right, we try not to say that, but I just wanted to ask you.
No, man, I'm not against it at all. And I've said my fair share.
Okay. Growing up in the fire service for me, I've had my fair share of incidents where CISD was involved and things of that nature, but one of the things I like that you do, and I think it truly does make a difference, is that your clinicians, all your, I don't know if you want to call them clinicians, but the people on your staff, they are either former police, fire, EMS, so they have that experience, they have that knowledge, that background. And I think that plays a big role because, we'll get somebody to come in, like, for example, and this is no offense, but like, pastors will come in and they'll be like, hey, I'm such and such, I'm here to talk. And you're like, cool, thank you for everything. But as far as the talking, it's a little different because they don't really know what we're going through. So I love the fact that with Next Run, you have people that actually have lived and breathed the job.
Yeah, that was the most important thing to us is how do we break down walls immediately? And the way that you're going to break down walls immediately is by being someone who knows and understands. And that was always my biggest thought, right? Like I even said, that's why I went into the fire service, because I wanted to be someone who knew and understood what that was like. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to be one yourself. And so none of us are professional. We're just, trained in peer support, and it's just simple one-on-one conversation like you and I are having right now. And there's just some, questions that we'll ask and ways that we'll direct that to kind of figure out, okay, how do we maneuver this? Can we handle this, just with peer support, or do we need to recommend professional help for them because of the severity of the case or just what they're dealing with. We want to make sure that they're taken care of. So, we have like I said, a little over 30 people, and they're all either on the job or they've retired out. And that's the neat part, is they've lived that, they understand it, and they can talk that language. And like you said, you have someone come in, and SISM is good. I'm always peer support, to me, I like a lot more because it's more personal. And that was what we wanted to offer, is we wanted to be there after everything happened. We wanted to be there, 6 weeks down the road, 6 months down the road, or a year down the road when someone is dealing with something that was so long ago, or that they don't feel comfortable going back and saying, hey, you guys remember that call from like 8 weeks ago? Like, I'm starting to struggle with it now. Like, who do you go to? Because SISM comes in immediately. They strike while the iron's hot. They're there to do debriefings, which I think are good. My mindset has changed on that. I used to hate them, but it was because I'd never had good experiences with them. We have a guy that serves on our team now locally who is a good friend of mine. Man, he's the one that changed my mind on it. His name's Kenny Ridlin, and dude, he does such a phenomenal job with doing debriefings. Like, I take him with me every time we go to somewhere local here in Georgia because he's so good at it. He's funny, man. Like, he breaks the ice well and just really is able to lead those guys in that. But really, the main stake of where we are is, hey, we want to be here, and you can reach out to us from wherever you're at. You can literally be sitting at the kitchen table or on the front apron and hanging out with all the guys or the girls, and you can send a text to Nextdrawn and say, hey man, I'm struggling. You know what I mean? Or you could be in your bunk at night, like, hey, I'm struggling. And it doesn't matter what it is, on the job, off the job, family stuff, man. We deal with all sorts of things, man. It is not just job related. It's not just the calls. It's just feeling that pressure from leadership, or just the low morale or whatever it is, man. Like, whatever is on your mind, we want to deal with. We're not here for just suicidal thoughts or people who are on the verge of taking their life. Do we help those people? 100%, and we're glad to do so. But if we can catch you upriver before you get to the waterfall, then that is our goal. So there's nothing too small or insignificant in your mind that you couldn't reach out to us and say, hey, man, I need to get this off my mind. Like, I don't have anyone else to talk to, or I don't feel comfortable talking to anyone else. So I just want to reach out to Nextrung, and this is what I'm going through. And so we want to be there for those things, no matter what it is, to be able to walk with you through that stuff. Marital issues, man, like whatever it might be, financial, sleep deprivation, like I need a good workout, whatever, man. Like, we're going to be there for all of it.
Okay. I love me personally. I always thought it was just for that, but you have just reiterated that the guys and gals there are present for a lot of other topics.
Absolutely. Yep.
For anyone listening, maybe how do you what is the process like to pick your clinicians in case you have like a good number of maybe retired, or maybe some that are still on the job that feels like, hey, like I'm on a peer support team, but I would like to expand my level. So how do you go about picking individuals to join next round?
Man, we're very picky.
Okay.
Yeah, we're very picky and very purposeful in how we allow people to come onto our team. A lot of it ends up becoming, it comes from personal relationships that we've built with people. And so that's our biggest thing is, do we know you, and do we know the type of person that you are? Because we want to be very careful in who we bring on. And that they're not just a live wire or just someone random, like we want to make sure we know and understand who this person is, that we have a good relationship with them. Or it comes from, people on our team saying, hey man, I think this person would be really good. Would you mind, just having a conversation with them? And we'll move from there as well. So it can be based off of recommendations. We never have put out anything that says, hey, if you want to be a part of Nextrong, send an application here. And there's a reason for that. And I mean, there's probably a ton of great people out there that we haven't talked to, and we would love to. But for us, it's, hey, this is who we are. These are our core values. It's faith, family, service mindset, and it's in that order. And, that's super important for us. And we want them to be able to meet those things, because at the end of the day, we all want to be on the same page as we move forward and continue to help the people that come into Next Rung.
Okay. All right. You mentioned earlier you are back full time in ministry, and so before deciding to jump back both feet into ministry, you left Sandy Springs. Was that an option? Because I'm trying to figure out how Greene County came about.
Yeah, so Greene County is a county that sits beside me.
Okay.
I live in Morgan County, and through some incidences, man, like I actually work Morgan County part time. I go back and forth. So I work Morgan County part time, Greene County part time. Just makes it a little bit easier, man. I can kind of, pick a day here and there where I can work and know that I'm going to actually get a shift. So I'm not kind of, I'm not ousted out, you know what I mean, on
Right, right.
a ton of guys being there. So it just gave options. But really, where Greene County came in is Chief Wiggins. He actually goes to church with us, and he's been at our church for, gosh, probably about a year and a half or close to two now. And he would see me on Sundays, and he'd be like, hey man, like, I know a guy. Like, if you want a spot at Greene County, you know what I mean? Like, I'll make that happen. And I'm like, I hear you, Chief. And for like a year, he would, see me on Sundays, and we would just talk and just built a good, personal relationship. And he knew about Nextrung, and so, things of that nature. And we would just talk, just talk shop on Sunday mornings for like 5 to 10 minutes when we'd see each other. And this past year. Man, Chris Eddy was a line of duty death in Greene County. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the tractor trailer exploded and it took Chris's life. And I reached out to Chief Wiggins. I was like, "Hey, whatever you need, just let us know. We're here for it." And he was like, "I would love for you to come in just a few hours and do a debriefing for us." And so, like I talked about earlier, Kenny, I took Kenny with me. I was like, "Hey, man, we're gonna go down there. We're gonna hang out with these guys." And Kenny knew a bunch of those guys because we kind of share firefighters between like Morgan and Greene County. All those guys
Gotcha.
that are full time down there work part time for Morgan. And so I was still just getting to know these people. I hadn't been there very long, was just working at Morgan County at the time. And so I would, see a few of them here and there. But all that to say, really, the death of Chris Eddy kind of catapulted me to go into Greene County. And all the guys after everything, they're like, "Hey man, we're opening up some part-time positions. We'd love for you to come down here and be with us, man. Like, we really love who you are. We love your heart. We see that you're genuine, and we're looking for more people like that to be a part of Greene County Fire." And so that's really what brought me there.
Okay. All
Yep.
right. Trying to see where I was gonna go. I got lost in the story, man. You're really effective. So I met you this past year at the Carolina Fire Days. So your speech, or not really speech, but your presentation was pretty jam up. Was that another calling that you felt like, hey, I going around and meeting individuals that obviously, to me, in my opinion, individuals who love the fire service are the ones that attend these conferences or start to. I think once you get into your first conference, you'll start to realize like, man, the fire service is great. I'm not just crazy that I feel this way of how we should all kind of be into the job. But was that like a calling for you that was like, hey, the man upstairs was like, do this because you have a way with words?
Oh man, I wish it was I had a way with words. I mean, I've done public speaking for a long time. It goes back to middle school, man. I was the president of our student council and had to give a speech in front of like all the upcoming sixth grade students' parents, like nervous and sweating and all those things. And so I don't know, man. Like, it's different from, I finally had to find my way. I'll just put it at that. There are a lot of gifted speakers out there that everyone is so different. You can't really look at someone and say, "Oh, I want to speak like they do," because it may not flow with who you are. Like, it doesn't work in your brain. Your brain's not wired the same way as them. Like, dude, if you ever look at Corley Moore, he's got like over 600 something slides or more in some of his presentations, and the dude is just on it. And that is not who I am. I have to have one slide and have to tell a story. So that's the way that I do it, is I just tell a story. And I wanted to do that, man. I wanted to go and tell people about NextRung. And the importance of that, but I also want to share my heart, because at the end of the day, man, my purpose is more than the fire service. It's more than NextRung. It's to go and to serve others and to love them and just to let them know that they have somebody who's gonna be there for them and that cares about them. Down to just simple conversations that I have with people at conferences or as I'm instructing, and we're going through rotations, like. I just want to be there to talk and build relationships with people. I'm not necessarily the greatest at one-on-one conversation all the time. Like, I could just sit there and we could be quiet together and I'm going to be okay with that. Excuse me. But I do. I love building relationships with people. I love getting to know people. I want to know their stories, and we just kind of move from there, And it's yeah, just something that I love to do, man. I think that's where you meet a lot of people, as you travel and as you speak. And that's where I've built some of my, greatest relationships and friendships with people, and had some of my greatest conversations and probably most impactful times is on the road.
All right. With that being said, what does leadership look like to you? Like, especially, you have the experience of the whole grass isn't always greener. And I know you weren't taking a shot at that department, but sometimes you have to do what's best for you, even if other people don't understand it. As long as you understand what you're doing, to me, that's enough reason. But what does leadership look like to you?
I've never led in the fire service, but if I were to, you always have your thoughts on how you do things and what you see. Man, you can lead from anywhere, honestly, whether you have a title or not. And leadership to me is understanding the needs of your people, because at that point, that's what you're responsible for. You're responsible for the needs of your people, and that starts from the rank of lieutenant all the way up to chief of the department. It really changes once you hit that battalion chief in a higher position, because at that point you come to work and your mindset should be, how do I serve these people and make it possible for them to do their job? And I know sometimes you're limited on what that looks like, and policies are different from department to department. But how do you show up, from battalion chief and higher, and serve your people and make sure that they get to do the job and they have, the freedom to be able to do that? I'm a big advocate too for, those chief officers and people in the glass palace, as I call it, that are serving in those positions. Man, when you show up to a firehouse and you walk in, and you're just trying to build that camaraderie, go to your people and like look at them and shake their hands. Like, don't expect them to come to you, like a dog, basically, is kind of how I look at it. Like, oh, my master's here, let me go run to them and be excited to see them. It should be the opposite way. Like, you should walk into a firehouse and go to your people and just say, hey, I'm grateful for you. Is there anything that I can do for you? Like, within reason, obviously. And just talk with your people and let them know that you care about them. I've seen it the opposite way, where, those types of chiefs expect people to come running to them, and I'm not gonna do that, man. Like, I will literally drag my feet and anchor down. Like, I am not going to run to you because you are gracing us with your presence. So that's just a little bit of, Blake's, heart on that side of things. But, as a lieutenant and as a captain, man, just being in charge, making those decisions, and also knowing who you have on your crews and who you can trust, and allowing them to also make decisions, because I think that's something that we get to do as a leader. We get to afford that responsibility to people that we can trust to make some decisions, and say, hey, what would you do here? Or, hey, like, I trust you. Like, I know you're going to go do the job because I've seen you do it time and time again. And just, affording that trust to them, or affording them to, the responsibility of, like, hey, this is your assignment and you're going to be able to do it, and I trust you to do that. And then just building a personal relationship with a man, I think that's the biggest thing, is, do I know my people personally? And then just listening, like, it's got to be a 360 evaluation. It can't just be one-sided, and a lot of times that's how departments do that. Like, here's our evaluation of you, and here's your review for the year. Well, let me review you as well. I might have some really great things to say about you, and I want to be able to encourage you, or I might have some things that I need to say to you that we need to work on so that we can make this place a little bit better, or so that I can enjoy showing up to work, and just being open to that. And I think that's super important.
Definitely. Okay. Love it. Love it. In your opinion, what do you see, in your opinion, what is the fire service doing good on for us as firefighters, and where do you see that there could be room for improvement?
I think that's tough, to say as a whole. I think you're starting to see, and we've been seeing, the shift in, the aggressive firefighting, and I love that, man. Like, getting back to that, where our roots are. I think there's a great way to do that. And I know social media, again, man, it can be a double-edged sword. Like, there's some people who really express that in great ways, and then there's some people who don't express it in the greatest ways. And I think there's a balance there, on how we express that as firefighters, or as pages and things of that nature. But I love to see that. Like, man, just come in and teach us what that looks like. It's got to start from the academy level. It's got to start from the recruit level, and move forward from there. And there's so much that needs to start there, but that's one of them. I think you learn about firefighting, and I don't know what your experience is like, or how that went, but I mean, recruit school was great, but I don't know that the aggressiveness was taught there. And, you know, having people who can do that in the greatest way, having instructors who can do that in the best way to teach you that. And so, you know, that's why it's probably really, not probably, that's why it's extremely important to get outside of where you are to go to these conferences and see those things, because you're going to learn so much there. And even instructors, man, like as an instructor, I like to learn from the students, you know, because they're seeing different stuff than I do. And we get to learn from each other. So it's never a, you know, as an instructor, I know more than you, and I'm not willing to listen to what you say, but I'm going to teach you the things that I know and pass that down. And if you have something that you want to teach us as well or bring up, man, by all means, please do that, because you might know something that I don't, you know. So I think that's a good mentality to have as well. But the aggressiveness, man, as a whole, I love that. I think we're doing a really good job at that, and we're really starting to see a trend come back to where it's the biggest priority. I don't love anything more, or I said, I there's nothing more that I love than seeing, you know, post on, you know, social media of grabs being made because of the aggressive culture that they're being taught in their department. So I think we're doing a really good job on that as a whole, and it's catching on. You know, some people are going to struggle to be able to change the mindset and mentality of their leadership. So I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to just, you know, blatantly be like, hey, you know, go against that, but it's tough, you know, and that's where sometimes the decision comes to say, hey, you know what, this department's no longer for me because we're not meeting the mission of what we set out to do. We're not upholding our oath any longer because of our leadership, and you have to move on. You got to go somewhere different. And then I think one of the things that we could do better on, man, again, I'm just a big mental health advocate, just teaching that young, you know, teaching that in these fire colleges and these recruit schools, the importance of what that looks like, and being, you know, just more blatant with that, being more mission minded with that in those areas, and teaching it to them while they're fresh and while they're young, and just making that purposeful, and even maybe bringing their families in on that, you know, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot that could be done, you know, with that. But teaching it to them while they're in recruit school and going through all this stuff, no matter if you have 8 weeks with them or 16 weeks or, you know, 6 months, let's make this a purpose to spend more than just a couple of pages or, you know, 30 minutes on. Like, let's actually tell them what this looks like. Hey, this is not to scare you, but to prepare you that there may be some things that come, you know, whether it's family related and things at home or it's things on the job. We just want to let you know that this is where our career is. Like, this is where our job is. It's not a secret anymore that we struggle with things. Like, we are killing ourselves typically more each year than the job does, you know? And so, you know, you can look at it and say, well, it is the job that's killing us. But, you know, outside of line of duty deaths, man, we're losing more people to suicide than we should be. And I don't know that you can fully ever stop the bleed, but we can do our best to make sure that we catch as many people as possible and we save as many people as possible before they get to that point. And it's just got to start at you know, that point to me, you know, as they come into your department, as they come into rookie school, and just making sure we're super intentional on that. You know, mentorship, I think, is a big part of that. You know, are we encouraging the other people beside us, you know, that we work with to, you know, take hold of someone, you know, and to really, you know, pour into them and make sure that they have somebody, you know. And there's some good friends of ours at their department. That's one of the things that they do is, hey, you're assigned to this person and you check in on them at least one time on your off days. So whatever one of those 2 days, just send them a text message or give them a phone call and just make sure that they're doing okay. And I think stuff like that, man, goes such a long way.
Okay. One of my personal questions I wanted to ask you, you know, so you're obviously you're involved with the church and you're still involved with the fire service. Is it difficult even for you to, like, you know, being a part of the church, you know, you are trying to preach the message of, you know, truthfulness, being a good human, taking care of one another. But then when it comes to the fire service side, you know, sometimes, man, we see like some dark stuff, some evil stuff. Do you ever kind of wonder and try to balance that? Because I look at it as a minister, hopefully I'm using that title right, that you're or pastor, whatever the proper term is, as a man of the church, Do you ever like question and ask yourself like why did we go to this type of call? Why did this incident happen? Like trying to find that balance.
Yeah, man, I think that's healthy, honestly. I think, to me, I know the Lord's not scared of my thoughts. He's not scared of my doubt. He's not scared of my anger or my frustration. And there are times where I express those things, and there have been moments in my career, calls that I've run, and it's just like, man, why? Like, why? Like, why did this happen? Why did this person die, but this person didn't? Like you look at it and even judge it as a human, like this person was a piece of crap. Look at what they've done and they survived, but these kids over here, they never had a chance. Like those are questions that you're gonna ask. And I know for me personally that there has not been a call that I've been on that the Lord hasn't used to impact other people. And so I have to choose to know and believe and understand for myself that the Lord is sovereign and that he knows the big picture and I don't. Like he sees it at a different level, a level that my brain cannot comprehend. And thankfully he does, because man, you can get so lost in those things and people instead of taking experiences that they've been through and using those to push them forward, they can use it to anchor them where they're at, or they can use it to anchor themselves in anger and frustration or bitterness. And you really see that come out, in people and how they do the job and how they approach things, on calls. And man, it's tough, it is tough. It's awful, like even recently, man, like in our community here in Morgan County, we just lost 2 13-year-old boys on a side-by-side accident. Both of them died like instantaneously. You know what I mean? Like, so you look at that kind of stuff and you're like, for me personally, like I'd just been in an accident, a few weeks before, and I'm like, man, I'm 36 years old. Like I've lived a good life. Like the Lord could have taken me and he could have saved those boys, but it wasn't that way. The Lord allowed me to continue to be here and allowed me another opportunity here on this earth. But, for them, like their timeline was up, like he was ready to call them home, is the way that I see it. And I have to choose to know that even while that's hard, the Lord is using those things, man. Like he's using those things for his glory, and I don't know that it makes sense unless you're a Christian. You know what I mean? Like it's hard. It's hard for me to, share that with people who aren't believers and for them to look at that and say, oh, that makes sense. Like they're like, how do you continue to believe that? And I mean, the only thing I can say is that, the Lord will change your heart, man, and the way that you see things. It doesn't make it easier at all, man. Like it's heartbreaking. Like there's never a time that stuff isn't heartbreaking, but I just have to choose to believe, man. And I do choose to believe that he knows more than I do. And that even though I've shown up on some extremely tough calls and been in situations where there's no hope, you know what I mean? Like for those people anyway that were showing up for that, man, the Lord is going to use that later on, as I continue to process through that and, become okay with that he's going to take that and he's going to allow me to, pour into someone else's life that's struggling with the same thing.
You're part-time now, but you're also rehabilitating to get yourself back to 100%. Do you see yourself going back to the fire service full time, or are you just gonna see how it goes, play it by ear?
Yeah, man, I'm just in a see how it goes kind of phase. I feel like I'm, where the Lord needs me to be. Maybe this was all part of it. Maybe this is why I got out of full time, went to part time just to go through this one experience alone, man. I don't know. It's something that I continue to seek the Lord daily on and just ask, like, what is it that you want me to do? Like, man, I love the fire service so much, and it's just such a huge part of what I do, and there's so much of what I do that's wrapped up in it. But truly, man, like, I love being there, and there's nowhere else I would rather be, and I want to be there. The goal is to go back and, hop on a rig again, man, and go to another fire. So, that's where I'd love to be. But, as I rehabilitate and go through all these things and this experience, there's a lot of thoughts that go through your mind. There's thoughts of dude, that could have been it. You know what I mean? Like that could have been my last ride. You know, my family could be without me right now. They're not, thankfully, and I'm still here, and I'm so blessed to be here and grateful for, you know, more days this side of heaven, as I continue to say. And man, it's good to be able to, you know, be here with my family, to do what the Lord is asking me to do, to continue next strong and just make a difference in the lives of firefighters, man, and first responders as a whole. So that's where I see myself. I don't know how it continues to go. I will always be in the fire service, whether it's part-time or full-time. There will never be, you know, a moment until I'm too old and decrepit to get off a rig where I won't be there. So
All right. You know, we before we started recording, you know, I did we did talk about what we wanted to talk about, and you know, you mentioned that you were willing to talk about the incident, but I want to state for me that we were supposed to have this interview before this happened. And I remember going through my social media and I'm like, I see a post, and I'm like, okay. Then I kind of see the same thing, and then I see the same thing, and then I'm like, okay, something happened here. And so luckily I hit up Griffin, Mr. Stash Salt, and I was like, hey man, not trying to pry, but did something happen with like Nexrung or Blake? And then he was like, oh yeah man, like this happened. And I'm like, oh, I was like, bro, we were supposed to like record in like 4 or 5 days. And he's like, yeah, that's probably not gonna happen. And I was like, okay, all right. And so, you know, I say that to say, like, I did not ask you to come on here to talk about that. I want just people to know because fire service is the way it is, man. You know, the people, oh, he wants to jump on this thing. I'm not a culture vulture. We were supposed to have this beforehand. Griffin is the witness. He can testify. So, I'm gonna let you have it, man, on what occurred.
So on Christmas Eve, no, that'd be, yeah, New Year's Eve, December 31st, man, I work in Greene County and had a great shift, dude. It was just a lot of fun, you know, and just finished a nice steak dinner, you know, nice and full. Was literally getting a cup of coffee. I took like two or three sips out of it, and we got a call for a brush fire. People have been shooting off fireworks, you know, like they love to do. And so we responded to that. It was us and one other apparatus. And man, on our way there, just the wind had been really bad that day. Just gusts like literally they would hit the rig and it would just push it. I'm like, dude, this is crazy. And so we were responding to a call, man, and that's exactly what happened. Like it pushed us off. Like I went off the side of the road on the right side, was able to bring it back on. But when I did, all the weight, man, just the water and everything just shifted, and it pushed us over to the left side of the road, and it took us off the shoulder. And it was about 3 or 4 inches deep, dude. There was no bringing it back on. And so, as much as I tried, man, just to kind of steer the rig back to the road, it took us down the embankment, and we hit about 3 or 4 trees. The pictures are gnarly, dude. Like it's the most wild thing I've ever seen. It ripped my door off, and I'm literally just sitting like it's everything is open. Like on my left side is just open. The roof had caved in around like over my head, and then I'm just sitting in this little pocket. And man, I end up getting myself out because I'm thinking in my mind, like, I don't want this thing to catch on fire. Like, there's two things I'm scared of, dude, is burning to death and drowning to death. And I know that doesn't make sense as a fireman, you know, and especially someone who, you know, used to do swift water as well. I'm like, dude, you're doing two of the th like, it doesn't prevent me from doing it, but I don't want to die that way. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, so I got to get myself out. So I try to use my left leg. I could not use my left leg. You know, I later find out I knew my femur was broken. As my partner was radioing out, I was like, hey, let them know my femur is broken. Like I could feel it withdrawing, you know, and just I felt that pain there. But I was trying to step down, man, and I couldn't step down. So I ended up getting into the floorboard. I used a seat belt at that point to let myself out of the rig. My right foot ends up getting caught on something. My partner comes around and drags me out and back up to the road. And you know, from there it's you know, critical care, dude. They show up, you know, I'm still cutting jokes because that's the person that I am, you know, and they're like cutting my pants off, and so I make a comment, you know what I mean? I'm like, don't let them see my Don't let them see my wiener. I don't know if can you say that on a podcast, but that's what I said. And so the guys are laughing, dude. Like they're just dying. And one guy's like, I don't know if I should laugh right now. Like, is it okay? You know, I'm like, dude, all I got left right now is my sense of humor. And so, you know, like they're taking care of me, man. They get me in the back of the ambulance and they fly me out. And I get to Augusta and go to the hospital there. And man, it's just, you know, full blown craziness from there. But I ended up, I broke my elbow, my left elbow. My funny bone is gone. It's no longer there. So I broke my femur in three spots. I broke my fibula. And then I had a lot of damage to my calf muscle, man, like a piece of metal, like cut through it and nicked my Achilles and stuff like that. And then I fractured my sternum. So just a lot of stuff, man, that went, you know, through all of that and four surgeries and, you know, just recovery from there. So it was a long time in the hospital, man, a little over close to a month in the hospital. And then, you know, inpatient rehab for a couple weeks. And now I'm doing outpatient therapy. So it's a lot, man. All that to say, man, you look at it, you know, there's a lot of questions that you have, you know, and the first one is, was I doing everything right, you know, and, you know, just processing through that and just, you know, talking with people, you know, that was my first thing is like, man, did I do anything wrong? Like, was that on me? And like, man, you did everything right. Like it was just an accident, you know, and sometimes that's hard to accept. Like it was just an accident, you know, like there's no one at fault. You know what I mean? Like it just, it is what it is. Like you did everything you could to maintain, you know, what was going on. And, you know, that's probably the hardest part for me is, man, I hate that it happened as a whole, but when you go back and look at it, like I don't know that there's anything I could have done differently. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't, you know, going too fast, you know, like I was responding within the natures of the call. We were on a straightaway. We weren't going around a curve, you know, too fast or anything like that. Like it is what it is, dude. And so, you know, I think there's a lot that goes into that, you know, a lot of compassion and empathy for people who have been in those situations, or just in traumatic situations when it comes to, you know, the things that your body goes through, you know, things of that nature, man. But all of that to say, man, I didn't cry one time until I saw the picture of the rig. And that happened on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever day New Year's Eve was on. I think it was a Tuesday. And I think Thursday or Friday is when I saw the picture of the apparatus finally. And I just, dude, I was just blown away, man. Like it brought me to tears. Like I don't know how I'm still alive. It doesn't make sense other than to say that for me personally, like I know the Lord protected me in that. Like, dude, I was literally just sitting in a pocket, man. Like it ripped the door off. There's, you know, I had my seatbelt on, you know, and always, you know, ride with my seatbelt on. So, you know, that's a positive aspect of it. But man, it just, I don't know how I'm still alive. I don't know how I don't have a head injury or a spinal injury or anything like that, man. It's a miracle, dude, you know? And so I'm thankful for that as a whole. You know, that was Blake needed that, you know, as just myself to see and just know, man, like, and I know that the Lord has a purpose for my life and it's not over yet, you know, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm excited to continue to share the story and to continue to tell people about, you know, what's happened there, and excited about recovery and to be able to get back on a rig one day, you know, just to overcome adversity, and just really push through that. It's my mentality is you can, you know, sit here and hurt or you can move and hurt. So I just continue to choose and move through it, you know, and have an understanding that, man, we just got to keep moving forward, you know, and that's just where I live my life. And I don't want to stop doing the things that I'm supposed to do because it would be extremely easy to sit here in self-pity or to say, man, this sucks, you know. And there are moments it does suck, dude. Like the pain doesn't go away just because you want it to. Like there's a process to that, you know. But every time that clock ticks, you know, one more, then, you know, you're getting a little bit closer to being recovered and this all just being a, you know, a memory in the past. So, but yeah, man, that's, you know, that story in its entirety, man. So it's crazy, you know, you see it happen, you know, every year people get in accidents like that. And I've often wondered, like, man, what was going on in that situation? You know, like was the person, you know, driving at fault, or, you know, was it someone else, you know? And man, there are straight up just accidents sometimes, you know, and it's tough, you know, to look at that and think that that's true. But that's it, man.
Okay. Three things. Number one, yes, the man upstairs is definitely looking out for both you and your partner that day that
Yes.
you're still here. So that is a testament, you know. Like I always tell people, I am not the biggest, like I don't push faith, but for me personally, I strongly believe in a higher purpose and everything happens for a reason. Two, your wife being the backbone of that family while you were out surgery, probably getting the phone call, the knock on the door, however it happened. She held it down
She did, man.
while you were
Yes,
recovering.
very much so. I'm so blessed by her, man. Just she's a nurse as well, and man, just having her knowledge and her advocacy and all those things, it was such a huge help, man. Like I'm so grateful, and just the way that she served me and was there by my side, man. She's, you know, my family is, you know, the reason I'm able to do a lot of the things that I do. You know, they give me the okay and the clearance, but to be her and to get that phone call and to deal with it the way that she did. And to you know, just all hands on deck, man. It's like she is a champion, dude. I can't say enough good things about her and praise her enough for it.
And third, the brotherhood, man. The brotherhood was strong for you, Blake. The
Man.
brotherhood was strong, bro. They showed out
Yes.
full force.
Yes, they have.
Between next rung, I probably can't remember everything or every company, every group, but I can say next rung definitely stepped up, you know, alerting people, not giving out too much information until finally doing so. But back of the bay, the fundraisers, the GoFundMes, all that, man.
Yeah.
That right there showed, you know, brotherhood isn't dead.
It's not.
Everybody that you've encountered, everybody that you've made a positive difference, Blake, they showed out for you, bro.
They did, man. There have been many days where I've asked myself, is this all worth it? You know, and it's a lot, man. Like the things that we do, you know, unless you're in the middle of it, like you don't see how much it is. No one sees how much work you put into, you know, your podcast and those things and the way that you continue to grind at that. No one sees the way that you move inside of, you know, whatever you're operating in. And it is a lot, man. And I've asked myself, man, is this all worth it? You know, and then something like this happens and people just come out of the woodwork, dude. The brotherhood is very much alive. It's all about what you make it and how you know, pour into it. And man, I can tell you this, whatever you pour into it, you're going to get back from it. And I've experienced every single bit of that, man. And it's just been so good to see that and just so positive, you know, to just realize like how much people love you and care about you. And some of those people are, you know, very good friends of mine and I've spent, you know, the past 7 years with, and some of those people are, you know, just folks that I've had a brief conversation with, man. Like I don't know, man. It doesn't make sense. I mean, we had people just coming out of the woodwork, coming down to visit. I mean, like we had people come and like drop off, you know, donations or whatever, man. Like I've never even met these people before. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, and I get just so blown away, man. I can't say enough good things about what that looks like and just people showing up. So you're gonna get everything that you pour into it. So I just encourage people to pour everything you can into it, and I promise you that it will come back to you.
Definitely, definitely. Another one that popped in my head. Like I said, there's so many, but I don't want to leave the ones that I know personally out. Bears of the Oath
Oh, yeah.
and your own department. When you were
Yep.
discharged, I saw the video. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, they were there,
They're,
man.
yeah.
They escorted us in. That was good. And Bears of the Oath, man, there's a ton of incredible instructors, but Shane Bentley is one of my greatest friends, you know, and just I love that guy, man, and just the things that he's doing and where the Lord's leading him. It's just so cool, man. It's fun, man, to be on the outside, you know, looking in on all these other things, you know, just forget about Blake for a second, but to see other people succeed, to see other people do the things that they're called to do and to watch that grow. Man, I love nothing more than to watch my friends and family be successful and just to be there to cheer them on. So, man, I just want to be people's biggest advocate, you know, and biggest fan. So, that's what I love to do, man. I just want to get to know people and cheer them on and encourage them in what they're doing. So, that's it for me at the end of the day, man.
Awesome. Awesome. My final question for you. I always ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself hanging up where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up? But I'm gonna kind of rephrase this for you because you're in like two different realms right now, as far as you're doing the face stuff, but you're still the fire service is on hold until you get back to 100%. But what does the future hold for Blake?
Man, I hope Next Rung is around for a long time, for at least, the rest of my life, and what does that look like after? I don't know, but to me, I think as long as I have that, then there's always a connection for me back to the fire service. I would love to see myself back on a rig, going to jobs and having a good time. So hopefully, that's where I end up. And at the end of the day, when I do decide to hang up my helmet and my coat and bunker boots for the last time, man, like I'm happy with that. And I can look back and say, I couldn't have done anything more. Like that's what I really want at the end of the day is for me to be able to look back and say, I couldn't have done anything more to leave an impact on this place. And that's what I hope for, man. Like that's where I want to be at the end of the day. Faith is always going to be there for me, man. Whether I'm working at the church, as an employee, or I'm just volunteering, that's always going to be something that I do. And then the same thing, man, through Next Rung, there's always going to be a connection back to the fire service. But if Blake has his way, he's gonna be at the firehouse, man, doing and being a part of all those things. And then just to throw this out there, man, I talked to Chance Craven yesterday, and we're talking about the traveling kitchen table, man. I would love to put a kitchen table in a trailer and take it to different places or go to different departments and just sit down with people at the firehouse kitchen table and just have conversations, and just hear about their life, and what their department looks like, stuff like that, man. Just be able to talk shop. So maybe that's something that'll happen in the future too.
Love it. Love the idea. Hey, you might want to trademark that
Right? Don't steal
case.
it.
Yes, right. Somebody
Right.
might be like, oh, I like it. But in all seriousness, thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your day to do this. I'm glad we were finally able to do it. It just goes to show, with me going through social media that day and then reading and talking to Griffin about what happened, it just, life's short. You never know. I met you at Carolina Fire Days a couple weeks prior, standing up, giving your speech, giving your presentation, and then you hear the news. Fortunately, it's not that type of news, but it shows, the recovery process. But I just want to say thank you. Continue being you. Next rung, continue doing what you do for the fire service, man. And yeah, I just appreciate you.
Yeah, man, thank you. And just grateful always, to be able to share about Next Rung and to just share about the things I love in the fire service, man, and how we can continue to push forward. So, you mentioned you don't know, man. You don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know if you're waking up and leaving your house for the last time, and if you're going to return home or if you're going to return home in the same condition, like you truly don't. So if I can end with this, man, love your families well, love your spouse as well, and just pour everything you can into them on your days off and give them the time and the attention that they deserve because, you want to leave them with the best, whether it's the best memories or the best version of yourself, because you don't know what that looks like as you walk out of that door of your house and you go to the firehouse.
Beautiful and perfect way to end it. Thanks again.
Yeah, man, thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.